Welcome, multifamily unit dwellers, to episode 162 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. Please stop banging on the ceiling. The upstairs neighbors will only stomp louder. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And tonight, we'll be discussing apartments. But first, we'll give our listeners a new lease on life with our weekly, geekly weekly update. Chris, why don't you lay out the new lease terms for our tenants?
First off, don't take any pictures. All the damage you see, it'll be gone tomorrow. I promise. It won't come back up on your security deposit. All right. So for my Geekly Weekly, I took in the second episode of Dark Matter and also the first episode of Killjoys. Basically, two back-to-back science fiction and, gasp, oh my God, space opera on the Sci-Fi Channel. This blows my mind. It does. It does. Dark Matter, I'm enjoying both. Actually, for a pilot, I would have to say Killjoys is it's solid. I mean, it didn't excite me, but it didn't bore me. I didn't slap my forehead. It was just a good, solid entry. Like, if I had been watching an episode further into the series, I would expect this level of polish. Because, you know, most pilots are kind of, well, sucky, right?
Yeah.
As far as my couch binge watching goes, I didn't get as ambitious as I wanted to, but I did catch up with iZombie, which is always awesome for dialogue. Some people say that it is like Veronica Mars with zombies in it. I'm enjoying it. And there's a really cool comic called Mouse Guard with really great art to it. And I picked up the graphic novel, The Black Axe, just to give you an idea of what the whole thing is like. Mouse Guard is kind of like Redwall and The Secret of Nim and Watership Down. It's kind of in a world where there's intelligent animals and you don't really know if there's humans there, but the animals, they have swords and blades, and the mice are usually good and the rats are usually bad. And definitely The Black Axe, I would have to say, is the Game of Thrones for this particular comic book series. The art was fantastic, but there was somebody dying on every other page. It was pretty ridiculous.
Brutal.
But yeah, I always suggest, if at the very least, you should pick up a copy and look through the art, because the art is amazing and very cool. And that is pretty much it for my Geekly Weekly.
Okay. Pretty comprehensive. Brian, what about you, man?
This Saturday was one of my favorite days of the year. It was kind of a underplayed thing this time around, but I generally really enjoy it. Free RPG Day.
Oh, yeah?
I love Free Comic Book Day, and this is kind of a mix between Free Comic Book Day and Tabletop Day. I don't know, this year the options work very samey. Like, last year there was a Battletech / Shadowrun book, and this year there was a Battletech / Shadowrun book. And there was some Pathfinder stuff, which I don't really care about Pathfinder, so I wasn't too excited about that. Just, I still partook, but I wasn't as excited as I usually am. I've been trying to play Final Fantasy while still waiting for you guys. You're probably better off not playing at the moment, though. The patch came out for Heavensward, and yeah, it's kind of a mess. I mean, it's a very large MMO with a significant jump in player base overnight. Their servers took a shit, so getting disconnected in combat constantly, unable to finish a dungeon without half the group dropping out.
Oh boy.
And one of my very favorite things happened. A Kickstarter that I had kind of forgotten about just showed up in the mail. So I got part of it, not all of it, but I got the first round of Fairy Tail Games Battle Royale. It's a pretty neat, like, reimagining of a bunch of Fairy Tail / Grimm characters, which I'm kind of a fan of that. Those are pretty awesome.
So Unexpected Christmas.
Yeah.
Very cool. Anything else?
That's about it.
All right, Cam, your turn.
Oh, I had a lot of good geeky stuff this weekend. I had to go up to the Central Florida area for a wedding. which I typically have a no wedding, no funeral policy, but my companion insisted. So I headed up to Orlando, went to this wedding, and was able then, once I got that out of the way, to partake in some good stuff like the new Gods and Monsters store in Orlando, which Brian visited a week or so ago. And, that was amazing. I mean, it's still sort of in its early stages. Did you get the same feeling, Brian? Like, there's going to be like a lot more put in there. I felt like there was a lot of empty space.
When I showed up, they basically had like a little miniature con, and they had like a bunch of like Artist Alley booths set up.
Okay.
And I was just kind of chatting with one of the guys, and I was like, so what are you guys going to do with all that floor space? And he's like, yeah, we haven't figured it out yet.
I mean, there is a ton of floor space. I mean, there's like, I mean, they have a pretty big area of like, you know, board games, and they sell really killer miniatures and like little, you know, the figures and stuff like that. And they have a lot of great art on the wall. They have booths for food, and they have a bunch of tables for gaming and stuff, but they still have a ton of open space. So I'm wondering what they're going to do with that. And I was actually kind of impressed with what that mall has done. I mean, I've lived in the Central Florida area at different times in my life for probably, you know, 8 to 10 years total. And I used to go to that mall. I mean, they completely gutted that thing. I mean, like, the whole mall is basically like an Artist Alley, like you said, Brian. And there was like a lot of cool little Gitche stores that I checked out, picked up some hot sauce. I'm a fan of spicy things. Picked up some other little just Gitche items and art things. And, so that was fun. Did you see that big ropes course they have in the middle of the place, Brian?
No, I didn't stray too far.
Oh, in the actual middle of the mall, there's like this huge open area. I mean, like literally like hundreds of feet up in the air. They have this, like, it's like a ropes course where they like hook you in to these tracks so that you can move on the tracks and you're hooked in case you fall. But you're like walking across rope ladders, like, I mean, no joke, like 100 feet off the ground. That was actually pretty cool. I was going to do it, but then, like, I don't know, the people I was with weren't too into it. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to make you guys sit here and wait for 30 minutes while I fuck around up, you know, 100 feet up in the air. So I didn't do that. But then we ended up, you know, checking out a little bit more of the place and, you know, found some other cool stores. So that was cool. The rest of my weekend consisted of some other geeky stuff, a lot of board gaming, played a ton of board games. I'm actually, through the Adventure Game Store and Vaughn, one of the other people that, you know, does a lot of promotion for the Adventure Game Store, I'm trying to put together a DC deck building tournament. That is one of my absolute favorite games, or, you know, series of games, as you guys well know. And I've sort of tried to get as many people into it as possible. And it's gotten to the point now where a lot of them want to have, we did an organized play a while back, and that was cool, but, we actually want to do like an actual tournament and try to get some prizes. I've been speaking with some people at Cryptozoic to try to get them to kick in a few, you know, items of swag that would be some good prizes for the winners. And, so I'm looking forward to that when it comes to fruition, and rounded out the week with, a day at Epcot, which is always fun.
Nice.
Spent the day there. Had some fast passes. So saw a lot of, you know, was able to do a lot of my favorite, rides. Yeah. Oh, and actually, after Epcot, hit up Cloak and Blaster again in Orlando, which, any of you guys been there yet?
Not yet.
Been Brian a little has. While for me. I think the video game store wasn't open yet. Well, the video game half.
Oh, the upstairs? Yeah.
So they've expanded, I know.
Yeah. It was awesome. I had a great burger, was able to play some fun games at the table while we ate. It was a Saturday night, and so the upstairs gaming area was a little, was too packed. I mean, we could have probably gotten a seat, but didn't want to wait around too long. So didn't play any video games, but played a bunch of tabletop games at the table while we ate with, you know, with the people that I was with. I was interested to finally figure out what their, I guess their business model is. It's $5 per 30 minutes for video games, if you aren't ordering anything. But if you have a tab and you're ordering like a drink or food or something, like every 30 minutes, half an hour, they don't really, you know, get on you about the $5 an hour.
Very nice.
But if you're just sitting there and playing and you're not buying anything, then they charge you $5 an hour, which I guess, you know, I mean, that's not outrageous. I think that's pretty cool. But they don't charge you anything for tabletop gaming, obviously. You know, they have like a little sign that I saw that said, look, if you're going to be playing games, please just order something, you know, we, you know, so that we don't have to, you know, so that we can, if it's busy, if there's no one there, I don't think they care, but it's specifically said, if it's a busy time, please, you know, keep, you know, if you want to sit and keep playing, we're happy to have you, but just, you know, keep ordering something every hour or so. If not, then, you know, please let someone else come and sit so they can enjoy the experience as well. But other than that, like, you know, I don't even have a problem with that. I think it's a great place, and they were packed. So I think they're doing well.
If only we could institute a similar policy at the Adventure Game Store.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Buy something once a year and,
other than a honey bun.
Right. The Admiral's wafer crackers do not count.
Yeah.
Awesome. That sounds like a pretty full week. By the way, how was the new, Tesla exhibit at Epcot?
I didn't see that.
Oh, me neither.
I didn't see that. I wasn't able to. I was literally only there for about like 4 hours. We had fast passes. We hit those up. Then it started to it was really threatening thunder and lightning. So we took off and hit Cloak and Blaster.
I was just bitching about Epcot not showing innovative stuff. So that's all I meant by that. Cool. Is that pretty much rounded out for you?
Yeah, that's about it.
Okay. Over to me then. Speaking of Disney, I saw the movie Inside Out. I recommend it. It's all about feelings, but in a way that does not threaten my sense of masculinity. Speaking of feelings, I'm overjoyed to announce that Amazon sent me an invite to order my Amazon Echo, my little gadget that will speak to me and answer questions. And I suspect that the Echo will either be a companion during podcasts or that we might actually do an episode centered on it. That probably seems silly to you guys, but when you see and interact with it, you'll understand how that could be entertaining given our penchant, or however you pronounce that word properly, for coming up with zany questions. So
we wouldn't need to type any longer. You could just ask it.
Yes. Yeah. Basically all the crazy things we ponder in our episodes, we could just have this thing answer. We could pretty much just preload it and let it do all of our episodes for us, I think.
What's the, that sounds awesome. What's the sticker on that?
I think it's about $1.50, but it's cheaper if you use your
Amazon Prime,
or maybe that's the cheaper price with Amazon Prime. So a gadget of not insignificant cost, but not, you know, bank breaking, I don't think either.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. So I will report back on that. I won't be getting it till July, so just whet your appetites for it now and tuck it away in the back shelf. Let's see. In addition, I did my good deed for the year in the kickstarting space. I should say in the crowdfunding space. I stumbled upon an Indiegogo for a really high-end mobile phone called the Sagus V2.
Okay.
And one of the things I noticed on their site was that they said that the phone had garnished a lot of attention from industry. So doing my good deed for the year, I sent them a Facebook message saying, hey, I think you meant to say garnered. And they fixed it, so I feel like I did my part. No word on whether or not I'm going to get a free phone for that or even a t-shirt.
Yeah, I feel like you did some work editing for them and save them from future embarrassment. They should, you know, give you a little kickback.
I agree. a little something for me, so we'll see if anything materializes. I'll let you know. Speaking of smartphones, though, you know, I am happy that I'm about to be done with my 2-year contract. And I know AT&T's gone away from contracts, but because of the nature of my data plan, I can still opt in for one. Blah, blah, blah. Whether I choose to buy or finance or whatever, I am just not interested in any cell phones. Until I walk into the AT&T store with my friend and see the Samsung Galaxy 6 Edge. And, like, now I want a new phone like yesterday.
Oh, man.
It has this cool beveled edge that has, like, display properties. It is a really sweet phone. And I will probably stupidly either recommit to a contract or just go for the financing option to get one of those. So, let's see. That's that. I've been playing more Dragon's Dogma. Hoping to get that squared away and done by the time Final Fantasy XIV is stabilized. And then I will hop in. I'm committed to playing with Brian at that point. Cam, you'll be in too.
As am I, yes.
And speaking of Hulu, I was searching for some of the shows that Chris mentioned, and I guess they're not there yet, but I did stumble on something interesting. Evidently, without me knowing, Robot Wars has started up again.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to have to start watching that, maybe. So I looked at that with interest, but have not started watching. So we'll see how it goes.
Didn't the Mythbuster guys win the last one?
Don't know.
Oh, they were top contenders at some point?
I could believe it, but I don't even remember. It's been years. I don't even... You're saying back when the show was running before?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those things that I would catch here and there, but didn't watch religiously. And now I think I might. But we'll see. Yeah, I don't know. I'll look into that, though. We can see if they actually have that pedigree. But that's it for my update.
Sweet.
Yeah. And speaking of pedigree, I know that the quality of the news we report is top-notch. And with that said, I think it is time for us to segue into our news extravaganza segment. Chris, why don't you go first? What new and exciting news do you have to share?
I have a little bit here and there, in no particular order. David Tennant is now going to be playing his second genre villain. He's been chosen to be the villain in the movie for the Chew comic book adaption. If you haven't heard of Chew, basically it's about an FDA agent who can get psychic visions from eating things and people, which, if you want kind of a taste of that, you can watch iZombie. He's also playing a villain, the Purple Man, in the upcoming Netflix Jessica Jones series. The Metroid Prime guys are going to do a new game called ReCore. It's going to be an Xbox exclusive. Just check out the trailer. It looks pretty cool. Kind of the setup is it's about a girl and her robo-dog after the apocalypse. And each robot has a little core you can pull out, which means you can pull out a core from a bad robot trying to get you, or you can stick the core of your doggy robot into a gorilla robot and then see what happens.
I think I saw a bit of that during E3, and we didn't mention that in the show. That does look really cool.
Yeah, E3, there was so much stuff going on. There's only so much.
But since we're never getting another proper Metroid game, it looks like this should be good.
Crossing fingers. It's a cinematic trailer, so who knows how the actual game will look, for better or for worse. Hey, if you guys love the Hitman movie, there's a sequel coming out. Not a sequel, it's a reboot, basically. My apologies.
So if you love the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you didn't like the movie. Why?
They made a Hitman movie? I have no idea.
I'm trying to figure out if you're being serious or sarcastic.
No, I am. I mean, I know about the games. I had no idea that they made a Hitman movie. Who was in it?
It was terrible.
It was Timothy Oliphant, who is now on Justified, who probably would like you to forget that movie, too.
Okay. All right. I will. Let's just reboot works for me, then.
Let's see. Oh, for on the comic book side, well, continuing on the comic book and the movies, the upcoming Green Lantern film for 2020 should probably be more accurately called the Green Lantern Corps movie. They are not going to do just Hal Jordan. They're also going to cover Jon Stewart and Guy Gardner, of all things.
Hmm.
So if you aren't a Green Lantern fan, I'm kind of a little bit, but not huge. Hal Jordan, of course, is the old guy from the Silver Age. Jon Stewart is the African-American guy who was awesome in the Justice League Unlimited and Justice League animated shows, which for me, those are kind of like the actual Justice League things. All the stuff that's in the comic books, yeah, that's the inspiration for the stuff I really enjoyed. And then Guy Gardner is just basically a leftover from the 90s. He's the tough, I'm an asshole, anti-hero version of the Green Lanterns.
Mm.
Let's see, they chose the Spider-Man actor, some guy, Tom Holland, who evidently was chosen in the casting school of actually choosing somebody who looks like he's the age that Peter Parker should be in high school.
Ah.
If not a little younger. And then I have something for the Curmudgeon Report that should be right up Brian's alley. John Hopkins did a survey and research on people's perceptions of food wastage. And the answer came back was everybody believes there is too much wasted food in the world. Everyone also believes it's everybody but them that's wasting the food.
There's a shock.
So, yeah. Well, as soon as we can admit maybe what we're doing is a little wasteful on the side, we're not going to make much progress there. Mm. So, and that, I'm double checking to see if there's anything else. Oh, I'm good. I have covered all my news.
All right. Well done. A great batch of news. Brian, over to you, sir.
I don't usually talk dates, but I guess this is important because it will hopefully change console sales in Japan between June 8th and June 14th. Anybody want to guess the number one?
Wii U?
PS4?
3DS. 25,772 units across all its various models.
Is that really a console?
In Japan, it is.
If you consider handhelds a console, yes.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking handhelds, but that makes sense. Go on.
Second place, the Wii U, 16,000 units, followed by PS4, 10,800 units. The PS3, 2,633 units. The Vita TV, 566 units.
Wow.
The Xbox One, 100 units.
Oh, that's so sad. That's so sad. Honestly, the Japanese will not buy a foreign product, right? So are we really surprised by that?
I'm seriously surprised at the scale of that. I mean, I expected it to be like half or something like that.
I think like even Microsoft knew this going in, because from what I understand, the 360, they had like Xbox stores in the malls and stuff, but they were just for niche collectors. Like, it was so they could say they have a presence, but no American company's ever been able to penetrate that market. I think that's true for a lot of things, actually.
You know, in thinking about it being Japan, I'm assuming the reason why handhelds are so popular is because you can do it on the train.
Correct, Chris. From what I've read, yeah, that's true. So, Brian, you were expecting maybe at least it would go toe-to-toe with the Vita TV?
I thought it'd beat the PlayStation 3, that's for darn sure.
Inferior style American electronics do not do well in Japan, sir.
Slightly brighter news. Everybody's all a titter about this right now. Lexus has shown off a prototype of an actual hoverboard.
Yeah.
A lot of people are in disbelief. They don't think it's a real thing. They think it's like some kind of weird like trickery, or maybe it's just special effects, but it looks like it's real. It looks like they've actually managed to, I mean, it's still not quite Marty McFly levels, but it's a huge step.
Is it a metal floor underneath?
Nope.
Because I saw that news and I didn't even bother clicking on the link because, yeah, over here, Mr. Negline is raising his hand saying, yeah, I think that's another
hoax. Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, but I mean, it's Lexus though, you know.
But this thing over any surface, Brian?
Well, they showed it over like basic ground. So I guess if it is a hoax, they could have like shoveled dirt over the metal floor.
Sure.
But it looks like Earth to me.
Cool, man. That's pretty impressive.
And finally, the 1980s video game movie you didn't know you couldn't live without, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, yeah, has announced that he will star in the Rampage movie.
Yes.
I'm shockingly and dismayingly excited about this.
I mean, if they do it like a silly monster movie, this can't miss. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only thing they could do better is maybe make a Narc movie.
Narc is a great game.
Yes.
Operation Wolf, I'd prefer. But Narc,
oh my
awesome.
Gosh. Oh, that's fantastic news. That might be the best news I've heard. Does that high note end your news?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's pretty good. Cam, I don't know if you're going to be able to top the Rampage movie.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I will be able to either, but I'll try. So apparently some 14-year-olds have invented a condom that will detect STDs. So you basically do your thing. You pull out the condom. You take a look at it. And it says, you've got syphilis. Or, you know, something to that effect. Like the other person, obviously. So, and it's so like sensitive that it will even tell you like the strain of infection. And so basically they're saying that this could revolutionize things and it'll, you know, give people, early detection so they can take immediate action and et cetera, et cetera. These kids did it for some project, you know, where they, I think they're in England. They're going to get like $1,500 or something in a trip to Buckingham Palace, which is hilarious to me because then they're going to meet the Queen and the, you know, be like, yeah, we made a condom that detects STDs. That just, for some reason, that's just funny to me in my head when I think about the Queen.
Very good for you.
I can't help but think maybe STD detecting gloves would have been better.
Yeah, like you gotta stick it in before you figure it out. Like, it seems, I don't know.
You know, you just pulled the trigger.
Yeah. maybe a wrapper that changes color when it detects the disease, so you don't even bother wasting the condom. Like, yeah, I want to take the chance.
Exactly. What's I don't know. Maybe it will evolve as time goes on.
Still, Cam, this is kind of a nice value add. Like, you know, you get done, like, oh, by the way, I've checked you out, and you got a little syphilis going on, so probably see someone about that.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, information is never bad, right?
Well,
I was being sarcastic. Like, you know, that's exactly what you want to do, like, talk about when you're, you know, in post-coital bliss with your partner. Hey, it looks like it turned purple, so I think you might want to call up, you know, Dr. Chang or whoever your, you know, primary care physician is and figure it out.
Maybe some penicillin with breakfast?
Yeah. A little sip.
There's some mold in that bread? No, never mind. We'll, that'll be good, actually.
I guess look for that on your shelves soon. Good news out of North Korea, which may negate the whole need for these condoms.
First time those words were ever spoken.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Apparently, North Korea has come up with a wonder drug that fights cancer, cures AIDS, cures drug addiction, and even makes you more attractive.
Ah, wow, look at that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pick a malady, doesn't matter what it is, whatever you've picked, they've come up with a very influential and scientific study that says conclusively that they've proved that their wonder drug called Kumdang 2 can defeat pretty much any ailment that you might have. And I'm quoting from their study, 56% of AIDS patients were completely cured. The other 44% were substantially cured.
Oh.
I don't know what substantially cured means, but, you know, is that like, I don't know if that works, but, you know, as a, just a grammatical phrase, but hey, you know. And then they didn't offer like specific numbers on their cancer patients, but they said that the survival rate, quote unquote, was very high among those receiving this Kumdang 2 inoculation. They also says that it reverses the effects of aging. They apparently injected two elderly people of the age of 70 to 80, and when they were checked afterwards, it said that they appeared to be only 45 to 55 in age, apparently, according to their health indices. And that they became invigorated and, in terms of mental acuity, their speech and sexual potency. So apparently they were gauging the sexual habits of these 70 to 80 year olds. Not only that, but it appears that, it will not just cure or substantially cure AIDS, but it will pretty much cure all other STDs. It will make your pimples, blackheads, wrinkles disappear, improve your muscle tone. And give you a proliferation of healthy cells, to make you look younger and more attractive to other people. Sorry, 14-year-olds. We're glad that you had a good idea, but North Korea is gonna just make your product moot, and we're all gonna be great looking and STD free for the rest of time. And that is it except for, my favorite news item of the day. You all remember, I'm sure with fond memories, episodes 1 through 3 of Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
And Jake Lloyd, the young actor that played, Anakin.
Great actor.
Apparently, yes, he was a fine actor. Apparently he had a little bit of a flashback to his acting days and thought that he was still in a pod race because over the weekend he led police on a 100-mile-an-hour plus car chase through Charleston, South Carolina, crashing into lots of cars and property and ended up wrecking and losing control and finally being apprehended and arrested. He also was trying to use the whole "these are not the droids you're looking for" trick and gave the deputies a fake name But the deputies didn't buy it. Apparently they were immune to his Jedi tricks. He's going to be spending some time in jail, I guess. Apparently he also punched his mother in the face.
Oh.
Prior to the car chase. And
That's good.
He also, I'm seeing some news reports that he apparently is struggling with. I can't, you know, we're giving him a hard time, but if this is true, then I do, you know, have a sense of sympathy for him. Apparently he suffers from schizophrenia.
Oh.
Which is not, you know, that's not a laughing matter, but
if he does,
you know, if he does, hopefully he gets some help and, you know, won't be having any more high-speed car chases in the future. And that rounds out my news.
I wish you hadn't said anything about the schizophrenia, because I was about to say, this is not the douche you're looking for.
Right.
Now that if he actually is suffering from a mental illness, that's too bad. That sucks.
Yeah. So hopefully he can get straight. You know, look, I predict that he will come out of this just fine. I'm sure there are plenty of reality shows for him in the future, for him to make some money and gain back some stardom.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the idea of how AIDS even got into North Korea.
Everybody loves a comeback except when it's AIDS. So hopefully it will be Jake Lloyd that makes a comeback and not AIDS after we get our Kumdang 2 from North Korea.
Something tells me that the dear leader himself is responsible for the creation of this wonder drug.
I'm sure it was probably synthesized from his, you know, one of his hair follicles or blood or something like that, because he is so superhuman.
No toenail clippings. Get it right.
If I'm found dead in the next week or so, you guys know that it is North Korean operatives listening to our podcast.
Of course. Yes. Yes. Well, kind of a good note to end on, Cam, because from what I understand, North Korea, in all seriousness, has not been if you've ever seen any photos of architecture there, people are living in these kind of large, drab, uninspired, multi-person dwelling units, these huge apartment buildings, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And the architecture looks like it's stuck at a time when people didn't really care.
Yeah.
That's a perfect segue into tonight's topic, which is something you kind of came up with, Chris. Specifically, well, it's to do with housing, but I'll let you take it and explain what motivated it and where you want to go with it.
Well, part of it is, as I, you know, as a geek, I've always had a kind of fascination with urban development and architecture, and of course, science fiction. And I even did a sociology paper back in the day. And I think the reason I got the A+ for it was because I covered and taught the teacher all sorts of the different types of fantasy urban development we have, like arcologies and things like that. But then I basically kind of boiled it down to that in the United States, we'll never get to any of that sort of stuff because we can't even keep up with our own infrastructure, never mind having the foresight to build something before it's even fully needed.
Right.
You know, by the time we get it done, it will have already been maxed out of capacity. On top of that, you know, a little honesty here amongst just us geeky guys, geeky girls, is I'm bouncing back. I'm in a second, third career at this point. So my prospects for trying to actually get a home that I don't have to be paying off for the rest of my life are a little slimmer than most people's. So trying to be creative and thinking of ways to, you know, look into something other than renting a tiny little cottage or, you know, having a place that's, you know, in a scary neighborhood, I've looked into or I'm kind of fiddling around with the concept of seeing what I could do to buy a home that's constructed out of storage containers. And that's something that's kind of catching on because now, thanks to 50 years of infrastructure, you can get storage containers pretty cheap, especially if you live near the coasts. I wouldn't want to build one in the middle of, like, Kansas or Nebraska. But, you know, if you're living somewhere else, it's a possible way of, like, being able to prefab your home quickly and cheaply. And looking over, you know, and just the ideas, looking over designs. Because, you know, if you played with Lego blocks, you can get some ideas of what you could kind of do using space and negative space to design a home using these boxy structures as your building blocks. And on top of that, I've also seen some people who really love to go completely green with these things, throwing solar panels up there. But, you know, in science fiction, that concept has been around for a while. I know
Ready Player One has, you know, some of the same concepts. There was another one where you basically, your skyscraper of apartment buildings were basically storage containers that you could slot in and slot out. If you wanted to move, you didn't move yourself. You just had the crane pull your a whole apartment out, put it on the back of the truck, and you'd go down the highway with your whole house. Way back in Snow Crash, they had people converting basically storage units into homes. So, you know, things like that, alternative housing and the future of housing as we see it. And on top, you know, never mind that our last podcast, we talked about Cam's fear that our homes will get smaller as our virtual vistas get wider so we don't get so stir crazy.
Yeah, you know, Chris, and I'm not being like a jerk. I actually really did look into this. I have two words for you: houseboat.
There we go. See,
especially, and I'm just thinking, like, you know, years in the future. I mean, if global warming really is a thing, and you know, which we all know is, but you know, for some reason people keep denying, and the tides rise and water levels keep going up, you know, houseboat would be great to have, I think. But in the near future, since we live so close to the coast, it's actually a really good deal. I looked into it. You can buy a boat relatively inexpensively. And you just dock it, at one of the, it's almost like a, you know, like if you have like a motorhome, well, they have these little marinas where you can dock your houseboat, and they have, you know, water and electricity and cable and all that stuff, hookups. And, you know, you pay a few hundred bucks a month for that. You live on the boat, you live on a boat. You can take it out and, you know, go out and fish if you want, or, you know, if there's a hurricane, you just float, you know, drive away for a while and come back when it's calm. I feel like aside from storage containers, which have their pluses and minuses, we can't discount sea vessels as well, because, you know, we're a water world, and it seems like with the ice caps melting, there's only going to be more for us to contend with in the future.
And I don't think it's mean. I think you bring up a perfectly valid alternative. Yeah. I do know that houseboats actually are a little bit of a different beast than living on a boat as your house. The actual houseboats, you think you can move them, but it's more like kind of trying to move a trailer home as compared to, like, you know, just get on, you get going. You don't really go fishing on your houseboat. It's docked and it's kind of there. You can probably get a tugboat to pull it out, or, you know, some versions of these houseboats, you actually need a tug to get it going somewhere versus having it move on its own power.
Well, no, the ones that I was looking at, you actually, you know, it was like, okay, almost like an RV, but just on water, you know? I mean, it was more spacious than an RV. It was an actual, like, you know, like a little floating apartment. And it had, I mean, look, you're not going to be breaking any, you know, sea records or, you know, whatever, you know, speed records or whatever. But you can, it's very movable and, you know, if not slow. And you can move from place to place. You don't like where you live in. You don't like your neighbors. Just
go find the next neighborhood. And you don't have to pack anything up. It's all there.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I actually would live on a houseboat. I don't know about these storage containers. I mean, you see these articles online all the time about, oh, this guy made this, you know, amazing house out of a storage container, and it looks all great and awesome. But I feel like those are like statement pieces. You know, it probably costs just as much, if not more, to build that thing than it did, you know, for someone to just go buy a regular house for it to look like that. You know, I feel like the ones that would be affordable to the masses would be much less luxurious than the ones that you see, in all these articles.
Well, the thing that always sets me off, but the thing that always makes me wary is, you know, they film that stuff the same way they film all houses, which is with what you call a fisheye lens, which makes the whole, stretches everything out and makes it all look much wider. You know, it's the same thing they use when they, you know, you see, oh, that looks like a great spacious hotel room. And you're like, what the hell happened? It's called a fisheye lens.
Yep. And the other thing, too, is that, like, I feel like in Florida, you know, it's almost like sort of a catch-22. Like, in Florida, down here in South Florida, we're so close to the port and we do have access to so many shipping containers. You can buy them for like $1,500. I mean, these huge, massive metal structures you can buy for $1,500. But the heat of Florida is so, I mean, you're basically buying a roasting box. You know those big boxes that you put in the ground or whatever that you roast pigs in? That's what I feel like you're buying for yourself if you're going to, like, make one of these in Florida. I mean, unless you have some kind of, like, crazy insulation or you know, intricate cooling system, other, you know, I mean, I don't think like a window AC is going to cut it, you know? I don't know how it would be viable in the heat and the direct sunlight that we have here.
Let's be fair though. Florida's not exactly viable to begin with.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Oh yeah. If all the AC died tomorrow, there'd be a mass exodus out of the southern half of the state.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Remember, South Florida really didn't get popular until like after the 80s or so. I mean, it had its on days and off days, but I mean, when it was all ceiling fans and no AC, that was it's like, who would want to go to Miami?
I don't know about that. Like, 50s or 60s, I feel like, is a little bit. I mean, you know, Muhammad Ali trained down here in the 50s and 60s. There was a pretty big population down here around then. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously the population explosion was, you know, inverse to the advent of and, you know, proliferation of the air conditioning in all the homes.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, part of the thing with Miami is back then it was basically more of a, it had a sizable population, but it was also a spot to stop before you went down to Cuba. Cuba right. was the place people were going back then. That was, you know, where the rich and famous would go hang out. Just a little Southern Florida history for you guys.
Yeah, well, it's awesome, too. We got our start a lot in Prohibition. I mean, a lot of the gun, yeah, that's, you know, that's what they went to Cuba for in the 20s, was to get the rum and bring it back through Florida so that they could, you know, Al Capone had a home down here and a little spot. But we're sort of straying from the geekiness. But the back to what we were talking about. I mean, I really think in the future that is sort of what we're trending towards. Either some sort of, depending on the what happens with the climate, either some seafaring home based system or really just like an ant farm or, you know, hamster cage type thing where we're just boxed up in our little cubes and, you know, they placate us by pumping in, you know, entertainment that sort of makes things look like our life is better than it is. Or even, you know, pharmaceuticals. Who knows at that point?
Welcome to Mega City One, citizen.
Yeah, exactly.
Disney's already on board with that. They pump Smilium into their parks.
Smilium. What do you think, Brian? How do you see yourself in 50 years living?
I'm really torn, like right down the middle about this, because on the one hand, the cool sci-fi pod with only the essentials and everything virtual sounds pretty neat, but on the other hand, are we ever going to admit there's just too fucking many of us? Like, I mean, if we're stacking each other on top of each other like coffins before we're even dead,
right?
I think we've reached, I mean, I know we've already leapt over a critical mass, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm not really sure I want Earth to look like Coruscant before we wise up.
Well, some of that is a confluence of economic and social factors. We have a lot more land in the United States, but a lot of people want to live where everyone else is living for, you know, the opportunity for jobs. And so again, with South Florida, our prices could drop tomorrow if suddenly you took away all the vacation homes or opened those up for somebody to buy as an actual dwelling for year round. That's not going to happen, of course, but that's what artificially inflates this particular market. Us stacking ourselves on top of each other, I think, will happen in more of a premature sense of people not wanting to be out in the sticks. Because
well,
the opportunities will be here.
Well, I mean, unless we do something, I mean, South Florida will definitely be underwater in 50 to 100 years. I mean, there's no question of that. They've even put together a commission on tidal sea rising. To try to figure out what can be done and what steps need to be taken at this point to shore up the shoreline. And that was kind of an awkward description. But, I mean, they're absolutely already working towards looking into if they can build a seawall or what they need to do, because the tides, I mean, the water is rising, and the people that live directly on the bay and on the water are threatened even at this point, let alone, you know, 20, 50 years from now. So, I mean, they needed to, I mean, I don't know, you know, as the land mass disappears from, you know, with the waters, I think we're going to see a bigger trend towards, more efficient living. Now, whether that means, a more of a green approach, like living with and on the land, or more of a vertical stack each other, you know, stack us on top of each other approach. I don't know. I'm hoping it's the former rather than the later, but, you know, let's be honest here. We're dealing with humans.
Especially living in Florida, I particularly love everyone's willingness to just pretend that ice shelf in Africa doesn't exist.
Right.
When it falls, like, the state is just gone.
Yeah.
I think they said, what, about 8 hours for it to just, like, seriously, massive tidal wave over the entire state?
Yeah. Yep. Makes me feel secure on my,
It's a great place to live for now.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of science fiction, I mean, a lot of what we're standing on is artificial anyway in South Florida.
Yeah, I mean, we're just essentially floating on the water. I mean, this landmass. I mean, you dig 3, 4, 5 feet, you're hitting water. But hey, I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, a lot of the Indian River Lagoon and a lot of the intercoastal, all that stuff has been shrunk because they've been putting scads of soil in there to create more land to sell. Right. So,
yep.
In fact, for those who aren't in South Florida, if you drive across a certain causeway, you'll see like a whole bunch of posts out in the bay, and that's because that's literally where failed real estate development projects didn't go off because they were going to literally build islands. The famous Star Island is totally artificial, You know, built up from nothing, and you know it was the Dubai of its time, I suppose, on a smaller scale.
Yeah. Makes me want to call my realtor.
Get your backup place in Colorado?
Yeah. I mean, look, listen, I'm a doomsday prepper. I mean, I make no bones about that. So I would be happy to live in one of these metal containers out in, you know, in the mountains somewhere with solar paneling and, a natural water source and, you know, cut off from the world. But it's not really, you know, practical for me at this point. But, you know, who knows? Maybe in a few years I might pull the cord.
Soon as they perfect HoloLens and haptic feedback.
Yeah, I'll be living in my virtual metal box.
So I've been kind of sitting here just listening to you guys.
From the safety of your Seattle.
Yeah.
Yes, from the...
elevation. And the high elevation. And
I think parts of Seattle actually would be... definitely adversely affected. There's a lot of waterfront here that would be adversely affected by sea level rise, but the land quickly elevates, so
yeah.
I think I'd be okay where I am.
You can make it out alive.
But, you know, as I'm listening to you from a higher elevation, I'm listening to you sitting in this little place I rent out here, which is called an apodment, APODMENT. Check it out. You can check out their website if you want. And it is an execution of a concept called microhousing, which itself grew out of a concept from like the last century in New York City called like a rooming house. Essentially, I'm in this structure the size of a few story high house with like 6 other people. We all have our own little micro apartment. It's not like I'm seeing them. You know, you come and go as you please. There is a shared kitchen downstairs, but you have basically everything you need. I have a little refrigerator, sink, bathroom. So it's totally adequate. Staying in these, as I have since I've come out here to Seattle, has really got me thinking about just what it is to have a place, what you really need from a home. I'll say, like, storage is at a premium, so acquiring things becomes an issue. But I find that I am compelled to go out into the environment more, to experience the city, to get out of here for my entertainment, as opposed to just kind of vegging out on a comfy sofa. So compelling VR environments notwithstanding, maybe less emphasis on your own little kingdom, your own little isolated empire, makes you more engaged with your surrounding city. That's maybe a positive I can say for a micro housing setup, and I suppose that would include stacked shipping containers if those came to be a thing.
Well, I've read about that too, about people who do tiny house living and live in or have a very tiny tall condo in New York. There was one accounting couple, they basically said, oh yeah, we're going to get this paid off in 15 years, and people were like, where's the kitchen? And they're like, oh, we eat out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we always go out someplace to eat because that's our lifestyle. Want to get this paid off in 15 years, probably sell it off to somebody else, and we're not in the mood to eat.
I've seen other places where they have that sort of lifestyle, and that's, you know, where's the kitchen? And they get like an inference hot plate, which are really cool. I'm trying to get around to getting one myself. Basically, an inference hot plate uses magnetism. So you can't use aluminum, but you can use stainless steel. You can use cast iron plates. And it's unless it's directly on the surface heating it, everything else is cold.
Yeah, so you can, like, touch it, right? Like, you don't need
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah. They have, like, yeah. this little thing where they have, like, a quarter of a pot of boiling water, and they're saying, put your hand there on the spot where the plate is not. And you're like, the water's boiling, really? And they're like, no, it's not. It's, like, ice cold. But, yeah, I mean, that's part of it, too, is the tiny living, the stacked living. I think there's there are several cities now that are trying to have this micro-living movement going on, trying to get people to rethink what they need to live with and how they need to live with it, especially... Do you need a library when you got a Kindle? That sort of thing.
Or, you know, could you walk to the library where everybody shares books? I mean, I know that's right. Like pretty much communist in our, you know, nation of individual emperors, but it's a thought. And I mean, this topic is very interesting because it gets you thinking about how society is ordered and how our cities are ordered and what it means to be sustainable. True, we're not out of land. But people want to live in desirable areas, and that means more and more people concentrated in those areas, and you have to accommodate them somehow. And I suppose you could continue to build sprawling suburbs for a while with all the attendant environmental degradation, but I'm not sure, especially as we're seeing the ill effects of that pattern emerge, that we are going to want to do that for very much longer. So... it's a double whammy of people want to live in nice areas, and there's a lot of people that want to live there, and living near nice areas in your own little ranch isn't really going to cut it going forward, I think, right? So we have to think of, God, I hate to use this hackneyed term, outside-the-box ways of accommodating people that are sustainable going forward.
Well, you know, this all rolls all the way back to, you know, the 1950s after World War II, they put programs in place to help boost the economy to basically give everybody a chicken in a pot and a car in the driveway and give you a two-car garage.
Correct.
And on an acre of land.
In other words, a nation of millions of little kings and queens living in their own little castle, and, you know, you don't want to interact with anybody, and I think that had certain impacts on society as a whole. And definitely had impacts on the expectation of what is normal and what you're kind of, quote-unquote, entitled to. So what are your thoughts? I mean, do you think that people these days are a little more amenable to acknowledging that other human beings exist? Or are people going to dig their heels in and say, no, I want my acre, I want my suburban house, I want my big car, I don't want you to exist in my world?
Well, I think to some degree there's a paradox because... everybody wants to get into their own little virtual worlds, and they don't want to have a sense of community. You could put that more into an enclosed, smaller space, but I think people at that point they may be like, "What did I hear that sound? Who's on my ceiling? You're disturbing my virtual reality concert." You know what I'm saying? So they'll want to be having their own little. Maybe they'll have a half acre. Maybe they'll want to definitely have a big zone of like grass. As they have their smaller house to get into their little virtual cube. I don't know, but I could just see as people get, you know, because being together sometimes it gives you a sense of community. If you're in the same place with the same people, more like in a condo situation than a rental situation, that can have benefits. People, you know, get together and they're more amiable. They can work with each other, but, you know, some people don't want that community. And there's also the cons of that kind of community. What I can't do what I want with what I own. It's what I own. It's mine.
Right, right. I guess that's sort of the compromise of living in a community versus living solo, you know? I don't know. Do you guys see a Ready Player One, like, future of people living in misery and escaping into VR? Or do you see people being content? You know, hey, I don't really need a lot. You know, my life is spent either out and about in the city or in the VR world. I don't need a 17-bedroom sprawling mansion.
I can't decide because I don't think people are ever going to put community first over their own comfort. That's just insane. But on the other hand, I can kind of see some people needing less for their own comfort.
So you think there's no escaping the selfishness, the inherent selfishness of people, like that's always going to override?
First contact will change it, but I don't think anything short of that will, honestly.
Well, I think the only thing that really affects behavior is a threat either to your personal safety or your pocketbook, right? So as long as people can afford to do it, I think they're going to do it. And unless there's a absolute, just huge threat to them in terms of the environment, which no one seems to care about now because it's not really readily apparent. That's not going to change anyone's mind. So, you're always going to have the haves and the have nots. And I think then that means that translates to you're always going to have people who have much nicer and larger living spaces and people who have much more sparse and Spartan, and even inhumane living spaces. So I think the question is, what are those going to look like and how are they going to, evolve as time evolves? I mean, you can go 20 minutes in either direction from where we live and see ridiculous lavish mansions or the crazy hood where people are living in homes made of scrap metal and chicken wire. So, I think that will be the same dynamic, just futurized a little bit. it'll be a little bit, it'll be a smart chicken wire and scrap metal home as opposed to a, one that's in the dirt.
It's like it's 2050 and you're still using a HoloLens. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You're so poor.
Exactly. I think that is probably what's going to happen unless it just becomes either non-economically viable or a true threat, a clear and present danger to the safety of people individually rather than just, the future society as a whole. Because we've proved time and time again that we don't give a shit unless those two things are, one of those two things are affected.
For all we know, the fucking ice shelf already broke and we're already dead.
Yeah, but we got seven minutes to live.
Start swimming.
Not bothering any of us in the least, yeah.
It's so sad. I hate to say it, Cam, but I think you're right. And I think you guys are all right about this. I mean, in aggregate, we're suffering from the frog in the boiling pot of water syndrome, right? Like, what problem? What? I mean, maybe it got a degree warmer. What do I care? The ultimate doom is really not of any concern.
Right.
And that part of human nature coupled with, I come first, is kind of our undoing. And the thing I don't understand is, everything I read indicates that we're a social species. We need each other to live. We live in cities. We congregate because we need other human beings. Yet we can't be persuaded to look out for the collective.
Right.
I don't understand that. Like it's a baffling part of human nature.
Well, I think part of it is people just feel like they're spending 90% or 80% of their energy just trying to run in place and keep things going, never mind finding the time and the energy to help someone else out.
You mean just trying to exist, just trying to earn their existence in our world?
Or just trying to get all the debts paid off that they either have foolishly or necessarily accrued over their lifetime.
Sure.
Now, I'm not saying this is fair whatsoever, but I will say that one bad apple spoils it because it's so much easier to think, well, if I give any money or if I take care of anyone else, someone's going to abuse it. So why shouldn't I just keep it? And then it is to think, I help out 9 people. So
the free rider problem, right? Somebody's taking advantage. Therefore, why should I look out for the whole, right?
Right. Like that perception. Well, they're just taking advantage. Tiny percentage taking advantage. Taking advantage!
And you can even show them the numbers. In our state, we're doing drug testing for welfare. Okay, 0.02% of people were found to be positive for drugs. See?
All this has ever done is given money to the people providing the test. Whatever, we
right.
caught one person out of 100,000!
right. Oh, gosh. So, Chris, did we cover ground you had in mind with this topic? Did you kind of want to talk about more methods and cheap, innovative ways of living or kind of how we might be living in the future? Did we take this where you wanted to go?
No, to a large degree. I mean, the apodment was a great surprise, actually. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's fine out here.
I was looking over the prices, and I'm kind of like looking over the quality of what I'm getting for the price and what I could and what I'm paying here for what I get here. Dude, you need a neighbor?
Honestly, Chris, it's a pretty good deal if yes. you don't mind living somewhat modestly. And bear in mind, too, that Seattle in general has by my estimation, at least a 30% premium on rent and real estate values over South Florida. South Florida's already expensive. Seattle's even more expensive.
Yeah, but looking at the prices I saw for those places, I'm sure they're like basically studio efficiency style apartments.
Yeah, they're small. They're small, yeah.
But, I mean, to pay those prices for studios or efficiencies here would put you in really scary neighborhoods.
Yeah. Whereas I'm in a pretty decent neighborhood. Things are fine.
Exactly.
Here, so.
Exactly. I mean, the only two kind of couple of things I could think of is I've seen a rise in kind of going back and forth for the interest in prefab housing. And Home Depot was even doing it for a few years. And especially after the hurricane. Down in, in
New Orleans.
New Orleans, thank you. It was Katrina, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And the state actually put a stop to it because they were afraid that these Katrina homes, I think that's what they were called. That was their little, they were tiny little prefab homes, was going to bring down the value of a neighborhood. So they made, I'm not shitting. Look it up. Katrina home. It's a style of home, and it's a very modest, small, kind of, but better living in a small space than living like in a refugee camp crazy situation. And the new spin is not actually doing all the stuff that it takes to convert a storage container into a home, because in addition to proper insulation, which Cam already covered, a lot of the flooring has to be ripped out. You can't use the original flooring because that flooring is coated with tons of poisons to kill anything and everything that gets on that floor. In fact, the odds are if you didn't either completely coat that floor and seal it off or rip it out, you would turn on a heater and you would probably kill somebody in there the fumes from all the poisons in there. But the idea of actually building a prefab home that you can put into a shipping container or into a semi-truck and then pull it up and then slap it down. That's kind of a new thing that's going on, where it's a compromise, where it's not the shipping container itself, but it's something that you can put in there, and then when you put it out and put it together, it's a little bigger, and it's got a little more space. But still, it's a modest place, and it's less expensive than either a brand new home or maybe an older home that has a lot of hidden fix-it-up problems that you might want to look into. But other than that, no, I think we've covered quite a bit, unless we wanted to talk about I think we also covered a lot of the ideas of what goes on in the future, floating islands and, arcologies where we're kind of putting each other inside of a giant gerbil maze.
I'll seize that floating homes thing to toot Seattle's horn one more time. Seattle has what many people would term houseboats down in very desirable areas. There's these, you'll never get something on land even anywhere near this vicinity for any kind of a reasonable price. And I'm not saying that these are reasonable, but they are more reasonable. They have these floating homes, which you are not to call houseboats. They are not houseboats. They are floating homes.
Because, those type of people, we don't do houseboats.
I guess a houseboat implies, mobility, and these are moored and perhaps affixed to, if not the land and the land below, but they're not meant to be moved. I suppose you could tow them elsewhere, but they are meant to be a permanent home, and they are called if you should ever encounter anybody who lives in one, make sure you compliment them on their floating home, not their houseboat. But they had to put, I think I remember reading this a couple of years ago, they had to put a limit on them, lest certain bodies of water just end up completely covered in these things as people look for this cheap loophole to find a place to live.
Well, that's covered in a couple of fantasy and science fiction stories. I think China Mayville and Paolo Bapicolucci have had their own fantasy and science fiction equivalents where these homes, that just basically start tying off and becoming their own little floating island of ad hoc communities.
And then you end up with what, like infill, like what happened in Mexico City. You know, Mexico City was actually, there was a lake with an island in the middle, and they literally just filled everything in to where there is no more island. They filled in the lake on which the original island existed.
At some point. I'm looking forward to, like, if I get a houseboat and it's over in your neck of the woods, when the ocean rises, my commute to your place is just going to get shorter.
Well, as long as it's a houseboat, you know, with a floating home, you're just stuck. You cannot come visit me. So make sure you get a houseboat.
Well, the key to that is whenever you visit somebody at a place like that, you always refer to it as a floating home, and you let them correct you if it's a houseboat.
There you go.
If they don't, either A, you've let them kind of think they've pulled one over on you and complimented them at the same time, or B, you don't do the faux pas in the first place.
Right. Got it. So, see you in Seattle. Is that the bottom line? You're moving out here?
It's something I'm considering, but there's a lot of things that have to go into place first.
Tell me about it, man. Tell me about it. Thank you, housing bubble collapse, for my lack of mobility in the present day.
Well, I definitely know I'm not going to be sleeping on your couch if I go visit Seattle.
Well, I don't have one, so yeah, exactly. That's correct. Well, all right, man. If you're pretty satisfied that we've covered this, and unless the other guys have anything to add, I think we can put the for sale sign on this episode and see if it moves.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, well, listeners, make sure when you are consulting the MLS listings for homes, you note that we are very attractively priced at $3, and swing by the neighborhood sometime, and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or check us out on Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, add us to your Google Plus circle, and join our community, the Nerdstravaganza HQ group on Facebook.
Have your realtor show you around our website, nerdstravaganza.com, where you can find this and all of our back episodes. Check us out on YouTube. Just type Nerdstravaganza into the handy-dandy search bar, and shoot us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com, and let us know what you think about this or any other topic that your little heart desires.
And with all that said, there's only one thing left to say.
Now, you're going to really love this fixer-upper. It's nice and cozy, and it's close to the places you really wouldn't want to be. Now, as you go down this hall, you'll see to the left.
Whoever's typing, can you at least mute?
Someone typing?
That wasn't me.
I heard some thumping there on the side.
There's some very rhythmic thumping going on.
Is there rhythmic? Really?
Maybe it's not typing.
Oh, God. That would be fucking disturbing.
I'm not doing anything. I hope you guys aren't hearing anything on my end. I don't...